Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Download our free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, at entrearchitect.com/freecourse. This is Entree Architect Podcast, and you're listening to episode 162. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. This week, I invited my friend Mike Rasika of youngarchitect.com back to the show to continue where we left off the last time he was here at Entree Architect Podcast. In this episode, we dive deep into what it means to be a young architect and what it takes to become a licensed architect. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, the pain, the passion, and the process of becoming a young architect. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by NCARB, helping architects reach their career goals. Explore your options today at ncarb.org, ncarb.org. And TrueStyle, the leader in high-end architectural interior doors. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/TrueStyle. That's TRUSTILE. And FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at FreshBooks.com/architect. Michael Rasika, welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. It's an honor to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. I wanted to bring you back to give us an update on what's going on. I see you all over the internet. Lots of things going on. Young Architect is growing rapidly. So I wanted to bring you back here and share what's going on. Before that, I just wanted to remind everybody, you're an architect based in Portland, Oregon. You're the founder of youngarchitect.com. And you've been here before, right after your big cycling trip across America, literally one side of the country to the other. I had you on. You talked about that. You talked about that big journey from one side of the United States to the other. You talk about getting licensed and passing the ARE and how to pass the ARE. And so that's, anybody wants to listen to that episode, also hear Mike's origin story. We're not going to go into that here. Go back to episode 132, and that'll tell you everything you need to know about who Mike Rasika is, and where he's come from and how he got to where he is today. We'll have links to all of that on the on this episode. This is episode 162. So, Mike, young architect, booming.
Yeah,
things are growing. Yeah. Things are really, really hitting a big pace over there. So, just give us an update. What's going on over at Young Architect?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff going on. Been super busy lately. Actually, backing up a second, I listened to that episode we had. Was it 132?
Yeah.
And or before we met, I wanted to pick up where we left off on that last conversation. And oh my gosh, we chatted when I was in Colorado. I was in a little town, Walden, Colorado. And I was actually cycling across America. And after that, I just had, the whole trip was amazing. It was unbelievable. Once I got out of Colorado, moved into Wyoming, Montana, I learned on that trip, and I never knew this before, that I just do really lousy at, up in high elevations. And so I was kind of like, struggling for a while. And then as soon as it was in, it was around Missoula, I dropped down to about 3,000 feet. I felt like I was Superman, and I finished pretty much the rest of the trip. It's like riding 100-mile days, feeling like it was a piece of cake. And, it was what an amazing experience. And it was a ton of fun to connect with you too, in the middle of that whole thing. I literally, walked out of my tent into a cafe that had Wi-Fi, and we sat down and chatted. It was a lot of fun.
I forgot that it was in the middle of the journey. I had it in my mind that it had, but as soon as you started saying that, I remember that. And then you had a big part of it to go, and I think you were going to World Domination Summit too, right?
Yeah, that, right? Did that. That was a lot of fun. It was a great summer. It was summer 2016 was unbelievable. So, back to Young Architect. I've been plugging along. I've been writing a lot. About 3 years ago, I started Young Architect, right after I got my license, and I really wanted to start an architecture blog. I had been inspired from, seeing what you were doing, seeing what Bob Borson was doing, and many other people outside the architecture realm, but in some ways, like serving their community. And so, the mission of Young Architect's always been helping students, ARE candidates, young architects, and other professionals be more successful. I've always kind of used that as a guideline for all the content, all that I've created, all the blog posts. I recently started a podcast, which I'll talk more about, but, lately I've been talking a little bit more about kind of blatantly telling people what my mission is and what I believe. And, one of the things that I've always kind of, and you see this with a lot of the writing that I've done, is that I think that a lot of the young architects and students and people in the profession really need to be their own advocate. In my experience, I had, you go through architecture school and there's a camaraderie and a community of people moving along this, schedule of time. And then we graduate school. And in my opinion, I feel like a lot of students graduate and flounder until they become a licensed architect, where I feel like, the AIA does a fantastic job of creating community and other architecture organizations, CSI. But kind of that in-between stage between graduating school, and, having your license, I wanted to address that part of the architect's development. And so I really started, blatantly writing blog posts for, should I become licensed? Should I not become licensed? Looking for jobs. Hang on one second. Let me think for a second.
Yeah. I love the articles that you write because you're very honest. Mm-hmm. You're very open about your thoughts on specific subjects. It's not always what people expect, mm-hmm. that you'll write about, whether your architecture is even right for you, and you're talking mm-hmm. to a community of people who've just gone through all of that schooling, and now you're considering whether you should even be licensed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very important conversation to have, because there are a lot of architects that should not be architects, and mm-hmm. it's not necessarily that they're not qualified. It's just not what their purpose is on this planet. That I think we all have a purpose, and we may go through architecture school, but a licensed architect doesn't mean that's not necessarily the next step. You go through getting your education, and then what happens next?
So, yeah. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I also really strongly believe that not everyone's on the same journey. I go crazy. I bang my head against the wall when I hear people say things like, you know, it only takes 6 months to pass the architect's exam. You just need to make a schedule and sit down and do it. And it worked for me. And why can't everyone else do it that way? I don't know. Like, that wasn't my journey. You know, I worked really freaking hard wrapping up my exams. And you know, it's, you know, everyone's got their own path, their own strengths and weaknesses. And I think there's room, you know, the beautiful thing about architecture is there's such a huge, the topic of architecture, the profession, the business, there's such a huge place in jobs and opportunities for people with different strengths. Yeah. And so, you know, being a licensed practicing architect, pulling permits, stamping buildings, you know, that might not be your gift or passion or what you have to offer the world. That doesn't mean if you're passionate about BIM or renderings or model building or building envelopes, you know, you can't be successful. And so I've always been trying to get away from this idea that, you know, not everyone's on the same journey. Everyone has different strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, or even using your education to go solve other problems. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel that once you've graduated architecture school, you're an architect. And I know there's a big controversy over that. There's lots of, you know, questions right now with NCARB and all that on what architects should be called. And that's a whole nother story. But my feeling is that once you've graduated, you can call yourself an architect. And that means that even if you leave the quote unquote traditional practice of architecture to go do something else, and you're still using the skills that you've learned as an architect to solve other problems and maybe in other industries, you're still an architect. You're trained as an architect. Mm-hmm. If this was 200 years ago, you would still be considered an architect. You may not be considered, you know, a master architect or a master builder, but you were, you know, you could be an apprentice architect or a journeyman architect.
Yep.
You know, that's, I believe that's the same thing today.
Yeah, I agree with you too. I think the word architect's been abused a lot. The IT industry calls themselves architects. And so I think I wrote in a blog post, like, if some guy with a 2-year degree in IT can call himself an architect, then why shouldn't people with, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of education be able to? I think licensed architects should call themselves licensed architects, and everyone else can call themselves an architect if they want. I learned something recently too. Someone asked me, they said, why do you say licensed architect? Why don't you use the term registered architect? I don't think there's anything wrong with the term registered, but someone also recently reminded me that sex offenders are registered. and having an architecture license is kind of like anyone can register for anything. License is, you know, you have the permission, you have special permission to do something. So that's why I always lean towards the term license over registered.
Yeah, I tend to do that too. And I never really thought about it, but that's typically what I say as well.
Yeah. One of the topics, I feel like I've gotten into a debate many times recently, and I feel like I'm the only one arguing this debate. But recently, I feel like I've debated back when I've heard other professionals in the profession say things like, I hate hiring recent graduates because they don't know anything. Or I recently was talking to someone, and she's this older architect who was telling me that she's kind of done hiring young architects because you train them and then you spend all this time and energy training them, and then they leave and they go on. And so kind of the debate I've been arguing is that I think the architecture schools have a very important job in training our future architects, but I also think the profession has a just as important job as training our future architects. And so let me elaborate. In my opinion, I truly believe that, you know, architecture school is a place for future architects to go to learn how to design and problem solve. I think it creates a safe place for students to experiment and take risks and learn the fundamentals of design and learning how to express themselves and from theory and history and learning from the past. I really truly believe, like, that's the purpose of what architecture school is. everyone always says, you know, there's only like one or two pro practice classes and students aren't learning how to, you know, put together comprehensive code compliant construction drawings. And that should be emphasized a lot more. And it's there and I agree. But I also argue that there's so much that needs to take place and there's so much development and growth that needs to happen in architecture school that now adding another layer of complexity of now you need to design code compliant buildings and have a complete understanding of how the profession of architecture works, I think is just way too much to layer on to what already needs to take place during architecture school. And so I've always been arguing that, you know, it's really to learn about the basics and fundamentals of problem solving and design. That's the purpose of architecture school. I also believe that part two of architects' education kind of begins the minute they finish school. And, you know, that first phase is done and now it's time to learn about practicing architecture in the profession. Getting back to what I said earlier, I always need to advocate that I've always truly believe that the young architect's number one job is to advocate for their personal and career development. So I don't sound like another whiny millennial pointing a finger at the profession. but I also truly believe that the profession as a whole, in some ways, needs to really acknowledge their role in creating future architects and training them and taking the time to sit down. And it bothers me when I hear people say that, you know, complaining that young architects leave them after they've been trained, because I feel like I didn't say it in that conversation to that other older woman architect, but like we're architects. We need to grow. We need to evolve. And, that's how I got into architecture. I always feel like there's more to learn. There's more new and interesting things for me to work on. And so, you know, thank God I'm still not working at the same architecture firm I was at, I don't know, 2 years after architecture school, because so much has happened and so many new experiences. And so I guess my advocating is for the rest of the profession to acknowledge that and realize, yeah.
I think the schools will agree with you. Is because when you talk about that case, you know, whether they should be learning how to put together full construction drawings or even business, my argument is that you know, we should be learning more business. The schools will say that's not our job. And NCARB will also agree with you. That's their job is to create that process, the ARE or the AXP. You know, that's or not the ARE, the IDP or the AXP. Mm-hmm. That's the intent of that. That's where you're supposed to learn those things during that process. And I think business, my world, you know, that's where that ties in, is that if architects build better businesses, they will have the money and the time to take on that responsibility of bringing in young architects, training them. Maybe they'll stay, maybe they won't. And we all have to acknowledge the fact that our society has changed. Our the way business is run today has changed. People don't take a job and stay there their entire lives. Everybody now moves. They work for somebody for a little while, and then they'll go work for somebody else for a little while, and they'll go work for somebody else for a little while. Mm-hmm. Lots of them are working for themselves as freelancers and learning what they need to do because of that. The internet allows all of these things to happen. We need, as a profession, to acknowledge that that society has changed. Technology will allow these things, and build better businesses so they have the time and the money to do those things. Because I think that's the argument: is that I don't have time. You know, I don't have the time or the money to bring somebody in, train them, and then just send them off into the profession. And if they build better businesses, if they're more profitable, they would be able to give back to the profession.
Yeah, absolutely. I like what you said too about, you know, things are different. And what I love now about like the internet and communication is I feel like more now than ever in history is there's so much information and connection and social media, you know, for people to, you know, guide their own success. And everything's not local anymore. You know, I'm in Oregon, you're in New York, we're friends. I feel like we chat all the time. But Mark, I think I've spent maybe all of maybe 20 minutes with you in real life, you know?
Yeah, right.
And so there's just so many opportunities. Another thing, and I want to say that you reminded me of is, and I don't want to sound like a brat or sound vindictive, But in my experience as kind of an intern coming up in the profession, I think people need to realize that when you let a younger intern person into your firm, to acknowledge that they're in some ways the future of the profession, and they kind of get to see the behind the scenes of how you run your business. Mm-hmm. I have had a couple of interactions with people that weren't so desirable. And then years down the road, when I was working for the local government, I find myself in a position of power and over their business. And, it's really, you gotta, in some ways, I feel like treat these interns and people working for you as if they could be your future clients or customers, because, I don't know. What goes around comes around, and I feel like the younger people are moving up to positions of power nowadays a lot earlier than they have in the past.
Yeah, and every generation has been in the position that the current generation is in, where they're not totally respected. They're sort of looked at as, I'm Generation X, and so Generation X had that same problem. They talked about us like there was something wrong with us, like we were a bunch of lazy. But that's every new generation is looked at that way. And I agree with you. I think that the profession and architects individually needs to take on the responsibility of helping train the future of our profession. But I would also say the opposite is also true. I think that young architects need to recognize that they are being educated and that they mm-hmm. are apprentices. And I think if they embrace the idea that they are an apprentice, and it may take 10 years to the point where you start the journey of becoming an architect. You start architecture school and you go through architecture school for 5 or 6 years, and then you go through a process of internship, and that may be another 3 years. And so mm-hmm. that 5 to 3, that's 8 years, and then you have. You get a job and you start working and you do other things in different professions. That's another 2 years, maybe 3 years, to the mm-hmm. point where you're, and it doesn't matter whether you have a license or not, to the point where you have enough knowledge to be able to do all the things that an architect does, a master architect, if you look mm-hmm. at it in terms of apprentice and masters. And I'm not saying we should go back to that terminology. I'm just sort of acknowledging or encouraging young architects to change their mindset that they're not going to jump into the profession and make, $100,000 or have to yeah. run a project or be permitted to design a new building. Acknowledge the fact that you're there. And that's the role you should be playing right now. You should be absorbing as much information as you can and giving back everything that you have to whomever you're working with to get the knowledge you need to get to the point where then you can go to the next level. I think yeah. if you look at it in terms of a 10-year journey from beginning to end, it will help you, because it'll help you as a young architect accept that you'll not be constantly mm-hmm. fighting and butting heads with yourself and with others. You'll get further along in the profession if you look at your role in those early years as learning as much as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes a lifetime. It doesn't happen overnight. What I love about this profession, and I've been bashing it a little bit too much, but what I love about the profession of architecture is that it's really, if you work really hard and you prove yourself and you do your time and you get people, you show your value, you prove your value, you're rewarded by compensation,
right.
projects. It's not this like you graduated this school, so we're going to pay you X amount of dollars. It's not, it's really about hustling. And that's the recurring theme that I've learned over and over again. It's the people who hustle, whether they're the best or the smartest or whatever. It's really about doing the work and taking action.
I totally agree. And that has nothing to do with age. So if you're a young architect coming into the profession and you're hustling, you're going to advance much quicker, both in responsibility and compensation, than somebody who comes in and just expects it all to happen, and you're just rolling with it, and wherever it goes, it goes. Mm-hmm. Same thing with business owners. entrepreneur architects that if you're out there expecting it to just happen, you know, just mm-hmm. design great architecture and you'll be a successful architect, that's not going to happen. You know, you have to get out there and you need to hustle and you need to learn business and how it works and be, you know, learn how to get good at that.
It's way too competitive for you not to be hustling, for anyone not to be hustling, because someone else is hustling just as hard and trying to get ahead. And so, you know,
yeah,
but that's what I love about this profession. You know, I like to work. And like I say, my friends who aren't architects look at how much time I spend working on this stuff and projects and how many hours I log and are like, what the hell, you know, but I love doing it. Like, it's what I want to be doing. If I wasn't like even when I had a full-time job, I was still writing Young Architect and doing projects and like completely busy. I like staying completely busy. So,
yeah. And I, you know, the fact that we're living in this era of technology and internet communication is so exciting because, you know, youngarchitect.com, you can start it and you can express your opinion. A community can gather around that idea and those opinions. Entrepreneur Architect, we can, you know, put a platform together, create a community, and you know, it's really exciting to be mm-hmm. able to live during this period. And create things. And so, you know, other architects could do that as well. Young architects can express themselves any way they want. Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect: NCARB, True Style Doors, and Fresh Books. Do you know someone in your firm who's always dreamed of getting licensed but was unable to complete the experience requirement? Well, maybe that person's you. Now you can get back on track with NCARB's new AXP portfolio. With this option, seasoned professionals can complete the Architectural Experience Program, the AXP, formerly the IDP, they've switched things up a little bit, by submitting an online portfolio. And along with meeting your state's education and examination requirements, the portfolio will help you or your employee get one step closer to becoming an architect. Learn more about the AXP portfolio at ncarb.org/entrearchitect. True Style is passionate about providing us small firm architects with the inspiration and the tools to transform our designs with the most authentic and distinctive doors available. And now we can see True Style doors and how they worked with the National Association of Home Builders and architect Phil Keane to create a show-stopping interior door package for the 2017 New American Home. To download the case study or watch a video and learn how True Style Doors can help differentiate your next project, visit entrearchitect.com/truestyle. True Style, driven by design. Visit entrearchitect.com/truestyle. So how do you get paid faster? Well, one more way is to use FreshBooks. FreshBooks is a full-function online accounting system built for us, small firm architects. We're small businesses. It includes invoices, expense management, time tracking, and so much more. It does everything I want it to do in order to get paid faster. I could send invoices efficiently on the same day. I could set up FreshBooks to automatically send reminders with the words and the timing that I want, and I can accept credit cards for payment. You should give it a try. When you're ready to give FreshBooks a try, go to freshbooks.com/architect and sign up for your free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, more organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. freshbooks.com/architect. And don't forget to let them know that Entree Architect sent you in the How Did You Hear About Us section. I wanted to just sort of go back to the fact that you know, that the blogs that you're writing, the blog posts that you're writing are really, really well done. And the newest thing that you're doing, you mentioned it a little bit before, is the podcast. The Young Architect podcast is live and rolling, and it's done really well. And so why don't we talk about that a little bit? What inspired you to sort of take that next step and start the podcast?
Yeah, it was, I had been kicking it around for a long time, and I actually resisted the idea. It was probably about a year ago. I was trying to like grow the blog, take it to the next level. And I was considering doing a blogger program. I never ended up signing up for it. It was like, you know, like a blogger mastermind. Let's figure out. It was like one of these master bloggers who had a lot of success was trying to help other people. And in the sales info, the sales page of their website, it said, if you've been blogging for more than a year and you really want to take things to the next level, I'm going to push you really hard to start a podcast. And that was kind of what planted the seed. And I never did that program. I never followed through with it. But I started thinking about maybe what if I did a podcast? I resisted it for a really long time because I always felt listening to myself on recording, like I had come a long way and I'd gotten really comfortable as a writer, and expressing myself through writing. But the whole podcasting thing made me feel really uncomfortable. And so I kicked that idea around for a long time. And then I started to get more serious about it around the bike trip. I finished that bike trip and I just I pretty much didn't work all summer. I was riding a bike across America. But as soon as the bike trip was over, I hit the ground running and, you know, started working my butt off. I pretty much worked overtime, crazy hours until I took a vacation in January. But and kind of like through just kind of doing lots of writing and working on Young Architect and wanting to make it bigger and better, I just kept coming back to this podcast idea. And so I started the Young Architect podcast. And for one of the challenges I've always had too, backing up again, is I've been trying to take the focus off of me. You know, I'm pretty passionate about this Young Architect mission, but rather than me, you know, telling my story over and over again, and in some ways I'm kind of sick of telling it, I wanted to like put focus on other people who are aligned with my mission of helping students, ARE candidates, and young architects be more successful. And so I started writing articles about people that are doing good stuff, doing inspiring projects. And I wrote a handful of those, but even then, in the process of writing those articles about, so I would have a conversation with someone, and I would then listen to that recording, and then just by doing that a couple of times, I said, you know what, this I can't express the energy that's being conveyed in this conversation through the filter of my writing, and that just kind of drew the line, and I was like, I got to start this podcast. And so what I've been doing with the Young Architect podcast is I've been trying to get people's stories out of them. There's a lot of really inspiring people who I've met along the way who I just have really inspiring stories with how they discovered architecture, what happened to them in school, what their experience was in licensing and the profession, and kind of how did you get to where you're at today. And so I've been trying to extract those stories from as many different people from all different walks of life, and really hearing about people's experiences that kind of bring them to where they're at today. And I've always been trying to focus more. I'm not really a big star architect guy. I'm not really as interested in the people that already get a lot of publicity. And so I've been kind of finding more of the little guy that's just doing really good stuff that I think needs to be acknowledged and having really great conversations with people.
Yeah, I've been listening. I've also been a guest. It hasn't gone live yet. I think it's scheduled sometime in April. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think you're doing a great job. I love the casual conversation format and sort of sharing people's, you know, origin stories. I think it's a great concept, and I think it's inspiring.
Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun to do. I've had a lot of fun doing it. It's also been a great lesson in asking for help. I recorded about 15, 20 episodes before I started editing them. I mean, they all need to be edited. There's always like an awkward silence or someone coughs and so I started editing them myself, and I did about 45 minutes of the first one, and I said, I can't do this. Like, I'm not even good at doing this, and this isn't the best use of my time. And so I've ended up having to hire a bunch of freelancers to help me with get the editing done. I've hired someone to actually help me to listen to the whole podcast and put together a blog post kind of summarizing the whole conversation, everything that was discussed, with links and everything. And it's been a whole process. And so I've been working with a lot of freelancers and, you know, getting people to help me. But it's been a great lesson in I can't do everything myself. And even though I'm kind of a micromanaging control freak, like I got to let it go and, you know, ask for help. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. I think putting together this podcast has it's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot mm-hmm. of work in prepping. It's a lot of work in post production and getting it all produced and out there on the internet, show notes, all the things that go along with it. I have a great producer, Sarah. Thank you, Sarah. You're going to be listening to this.
Shout out!
I appreciate everything you do for Entree Architect. And she, you know, I record these and I record the other intro and outros and I mm-hmm. send them to Sarah and she makes them sound the way they sound. And so, it's great to have help. And it is, you know, I agree with you. It's very difficult to delegate. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of not part of my nature. And it's something that I agree. And I never really thought about it until you just said it, that delegating the podcast was sort of the first step for me. To start delegating other things as well. And so I agree.
Yeah. It even gets back to architects. If we look at these great architects and all these beautiful buildings they've done, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright himself personally didn't draw every single line and do every single detail. You know, I'm sure he reviewed it, but we need a team of people to help us get these things done. And
The most successful people in life are it's really a team that's made them successful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what else is going on over at Young Architect?
So I've been writing a whole lot, and I've been pushing on the podcast pretty hard. The podcast has actually been fueling a lot of the writing I've been doing lately, just getting inspired from all these conversations. But I've been also actively working on the ARE Bootcamp program. We touched upon it on our last show.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. Remind people what the ARE Bootcamp is, and it's evolved a little bit. So talk about how it's changed.
Yeah, actually, let me give you a quick history of what it is, where it came from. You know, I passed my exams. I started Young Architect. I started getting a lot of really positive feedback on the blog post I wrote about the ARE. And I ended up writing a book, kind of taking that energy. I ended up writing a book called How to Pass the Architect Registration Exam, which is a little black book about, you know, how to use all this study material and get in the right mindset to get this thing done. It's not a resource guide. It's more of a handbook for how to use all this study material and information and get it done. And so from that book, I started to have people reaching out to me saying, Mike, you got a lot of info and a lot of insight. I would like to hire you to coach me as I get started for the architect exam. And, you know, one of the big points I make in my book is the problem with the architect exam is that, you know, up to this point in your architect education, there's been a community of people all working on the same exact goal. And now you're on a self-guided studying process. And there are many, many people that are all working on the same goal as you of studying for these exams, but no one's talking to each other. We live in this world of communication where everyone's hyper communicating, but, you know, everyone's very lonely doing this by themselves. And so rather than coaching people one-on-one, which I was never really interested in, I came up with this idea back in 2015 that what if I brought a group of people together and we treated it like a design studio? And rather than everyone, you know, working, rather than designing a project, everyone studying for the exams, sharing insights, feeding off the energy of each other, and kind of got like, let's do it as a group. And so I did the first ARE Bootcamp back in September of 2015. And I was doing groups of five people back then. Now I do groups of six. But I brought a small group of people together. And right away, I knew, like, this works. This is a formula. Like, this, everyone's so familiar with how the design studio works. So, like, treating the exams this way seemed to make a lot of sense. And so really what the ARE Bootcamp is, it's kind of an extension of what my book is. It's not a class. I always need to emphasize it's not a class or a course. It's a program. If it was a class or a course, I would teach the stuff to you for 12 hours a week and you sit and passively listen and take notes. As a program, you study on your own, I would say 8 to 15 hours a week. And my role is to guide or help you teach it to yourself. Having said that, I've done the program so many times. I know what the questions are and where people get stuck. And I do quite a bit of teaching myself. And, you know, like, let's talk, let's dive into A201 and general conditions and bidding. And I've learned a lot doing this program. And so I do a little bit of teaching, but it's really to guide people to get them started with making progress on the architecture registration exam. It's really for the people just beginning. I've had people reach out to me who are very far along wanting to do the program. And I say, you know, like, I'm worried you're not, you know, a lot of this stuff. But in my experience and my personal experience, I spent a lot of time kind of figuring out what the next step is. How do I use all this information? There's too much information available, but knowing how to use it effectively, is really, a big part of the program.
So do you have multiple groups going on at one time, or do you do one group at a time?
Well, I do. One of the big lessons I learned, it was easier. I used to do, like, I'll do one call on a Sunday night and another call on a Wednesday night. I don't do that anymore. It's easier for me to sit. And so now I do three groups back to back. I sit and talk about the architect exam for 3.5 hours on Sunday and Monday nights. And so I overlap. So I have, like, each group has 6 people in it. Then there's, like, the January boot camp, which has 3 groups, and that's on Sunday nights. And then I have the February boot camp, which is on 3 more groups on a Monday night, and they overlap about halfway through. So when one's halfway through, another one's beginning. And that's kind of how I do it. I stack it. But at this point, I've run 17 different groups, and I've worked with about 101 people.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great. Yeah. Do you have any feedback on how many have passed the exam because of the boot camp?
Yeah, and I always need to say that, you know, the ARE boot camp's not a guarantee you're going to pass the test.
Yeah, right.
The success rate of the ARE boot camp is the same as what it is for the test, or whether you take it or not. As crazy as that sounds, in my experience, my personal experience, I showed up to take the SPD test, and there was nothing left for me to read. I was so well prepared. I went way above and beyond. I was nervous about that test anyways, but I went way above and beyond on what I needed to do to be prepared for it. And I had memorized all my questions. I knew the stuff inside and out. There wasn't any reason for me to not do well. But when I showed up to take the test, everything I studied wasn't there. I got some crazy version. There's 4 or 5 versions of each exam, and the questions are constantly moving. There's a lot of moving parts, and so you know, I failed that test even though I shouldn't have. I knew the stuff inside and out. I ended up coming back 6 months later, and I didn't really do much more work. I was actually less prepared the second time I took that test than I was the first time, and so I ended up. The second time the test was so easy, it was a walk in the park. I thought, like, am I missing something? This is, like, these questions, I know this stuff inside and out. And so it's always a moving target. I hate to say it, there's been, you know, 3 or 4 people that have taken my program who've gone above and beyond what they need to do, and showed up on test day, and, you know, they just didn't pass.
Yeah.
But, you know, the intention of this program is we do everything that we can to be as best prepared for the hardest version of the test. And so I always say the success rate of the test is the same as the exam. But having said that, the success rate of the people that take this program and get to the finish line, and that's kind of how I see it. Like, in some ways, that's more important to me. I want to see you finish all of these tests. And I'm going to hold your hand for 10 weeks. We're going to go through this process. I'm going to teach you everything I know about preparing for these tests. And ideally, I want to see you get to the very end. You might fail a test or two along the way. It's part of the process. Everyone fails. There's nothing wrong with failing a test. But I really want to see people get to the end. And so I'm starting to see the first batch of people that have taken my program come back and say, I'm done. I've made it. I'm a licensed architect now. And that's been really rewarding.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the best thing about it, because when I took the exam, it was just at the very beginning of the new format with computers. Before that, everybody showed up at the same day, at the same time, in the big giant coliseums, and they took the exam all together in one shot, one day, every year. Mm-hmm. And so when they did that, you know, it may have been, you know, if you look at it, it may have been easier because You only had one day to do it. So if you decided that you wanted to take the exams, you studied that year and you prepared for it because you knew that that day was my only day until, or I'm going to have to wait another year. As soon as they switched over to being able to take the exam anytime, that's when it got hard to take the exam because your life gets in the way. You know, now if you could take it anytime you want, then, you know, when do you take it? And that actually, I fell into that problem, and it took me, you know, a bunch of years before I said, okay, I'm going to become a licensed architect and take the exam. What I love about the boot camp is that, okay, you can focus on saying, okay, I'm going to take the exam. I'm going to commit to a program like this boot camp and get it done, you know? And so you it sort of helps you focus and guide the target of becoming a licensed architect. So Mike, if somebody wanted to join this boot camp, what's included in it? What do you get with it?
So it's a 10-week program, and I have a calendar, you know, kind of outlining the whole thing. We meet weekly on a dedicated meeting. And so, you know, me and six people get on a video chat. I use GoToMeeting, and we kind of check in. How'd the week go? I kind of ask the same questions every week. How'd the week go? What'd you study? What were the challenges? Any questions on the content? And we talk about that. And, you know, someone might show up and say, you know, I was reading about bidding and something didn't make sense. And I was reading this thing in this page and, you know, we talk about it. Or someone else in the group chimes in and said, hey, I had that same exact question and I solved it because then I read this chapter. And in some ways we kind of had like this group dialogue, checking in with each person, making sure like no one's stuck or gets left behind. And so the meetings are kind of the core of what this program is, but there's a lot more pieces to it. There's a lot of moving parts. I have a syllabus, and you know, both you and I, Mark, know pretty damn well that nothing happens in the architecture world without a deadline. And that's the biggest challenge with these exams is you got a 5-year deadline, and that's a great reason to put it off forever. And so in this boot camp, I have a syllabus that pretty much tells everyone what they need to be reading each week. And that syllabus kind of gets us through the first half of the program. We do a big survey, kind of this broad survey of what's on the test. What are all the study materials available? And we practice showing up and the consistency of finding the time to do this. Because I think that's a big part of the challenge, too, is, you know, everyone's working 40 hours a week. How are you going to add 8 to 15 hours of extra work of sitting and reading and studying and doing this into your already busy life? And, you know, people have kids and commitments and other things going on. So, you know, getting that ironed out in the first half of the program is really the number one goal. And so while we're kind of figuring out how you're going to add this into your busy life, we're doing a broad survey of what's on the test. The second half of the program, then we really drill down. We choose a test date about halfway through, and then we spend the remaining 5 weeks, you know, mastering all the information. I have a bunch of resources. I got a Dropbox that we share. I got a website with stuff all over the web. There's no illegal file sharing in my Dropbox, and everyone's got to purchase their own study material. But there's still a lot of really good YouTube videos and PDFs, and the AIA's created tremendous resources for, you know, for studying for the exam. And so we use all those. I say the Microseeker resource. I'm a resource for the bootcamp. I would rather, there's so much interactivity going on. I would rather for someone call me on the phone and ask me a question and let's chat it out for 5 or 10 minutes than people go on a goose chase looking for an answer and spend 2 hours, you know, and really kind of like using me as a resource to get you up to speed, to answer your questions, to keep you moving along is a big part of the program. We also track our time, similarly to how people track their time in the office, how much energy, we measure that to see how much, you know, people are working on it each week. I say we study every day. I give people a to-do list of stuff. You know, it's not just reading. There's stuff that's got to get printed. There's blog posts, there's videos, anything that's not reading. I give you a million things that you could be working on. And so say you have a really busy day at the office, or there's something going on at night, you know, you don't have time to study. Go to my list. There's a million things on there that you could do in 15, 20 minutes, but we try to consistently study every single day to kind of help build momentum over the course of 10 weeks. I've created a lot of videos, and I create the videos as a way to maximize our meeting times together. It's really like, to have less of me talking and more of everyone else in the program. If I got something to teach or share, I just record a video and let people watch it on their own time rather than on our meeting time. I got a private Facebook group that we chat in. I got that has practice questions being dripped out. I use a social media software that spits out a practice question that I wrote every day. And then I have an assistant that comes in and gives the official answers on twice a week. And so people reply as they're using Facebook. They're answering practice questions. I push practice questions really hard, Mark, because I feel like people can understand this information really well. But unless you've practiced giving it back and giving back the answers, you know, that's where a lot of people get tripped up. And even especially, you know, not to pick on anyone, but a group of people that always get tripped up with practice questions are people that speak English as a second language. I think sometimes get confused or they get confused within the way the questions are worded sometimes.
Right.
And so I just push practice questions really hard. We write our own practice questions from the stuff that we study, and we share them with the other people in the boot camp, and then they study them. And then one of the things I've added recently to the boot camp, like, you know, the boot camp's also been, I'm constantly trying new things and getting rid of what doesn't work and keeping what does. And one of the things I started doing recently is creating these meetups of people studying together. And so the way the meetup goes is I teach everyone how to run these, but everyone in the program's in charge of running two meetups. And, basically, you email everyone in the program and say, I'm meeting up at this time. If you're around, join me. And so if people are studying anyways during that time, why not jump on a video chat phone call and work on some practice questions or discuss what what you've been studying this week? And so it's really kind of a way to kind of get people studying together and talking to each other and kind of working with each other as a group. And that's just been profoundly powerful. And so the meetup thing's really taken off. And at this point, the more boot camps I'm running, like I think there were like four or five meetups this week. And they don't always work. We're across all time zones. The boot camp's pretty global. I even have people overseas sometimes. But not all meetups are going to work with your schedule, but some of them do. And so I always say, if you can make them, great. To kind of work together with other people.
Yeah, you weren't kidding when you said that the boot camp has evolved. It certainly has grown. It sounds like a very complete program. Is there a specific place that they should go? Should they just go to youngarchitect.com, or is there a specific place they should go to learn more?
If you go to youngarchitect.com, it's all over. It's hard to get far in that website without yeah. seeing something about the boot camp. But that'll take you
all
to
right.
it, youngarchitect.com.
It's great to hear the update of everything you're doing. I think Young Architect and the blogs are going well. I've seen your writing all over the internet outside of mm-hmm. Young Architect. It's been on Architizer and Arc Daily and other places. The podcast is great. And the boot camp sounds like it's booming. So it's great to hear the success that you're having, the success that you're helping with other people, you sharing your knowledge. It's really inspiring to hear your journey, to watch you grow. And I appreciate you for being here with me today.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mark. Thanks for acknowledging all the journey I've been on, because honestly, going through it, I feel like a lot of these things with just starting Young Architect, the podcast, the boot camp, like a lot of the stuff I've been working on, it's always felt really shaky and clunky at the beginning, but just kind of staying true to what I believe and keep pushing through. And I feel like I've been in some ways more fine tuning and getting better at what I'm already doing than trying to really add more to it. So
yeah, just small victories, just keep progressing. Yeah. and it gets better and better and better. Okay, the Young Architect website is youngarchitect.com, and you're all over the internet, on social media, as Young Architects PDX. So that's ARCHITX PDX, as in Portland. So it's Young Architects PDX, or you could just search Mike Rosica, Young Architect, in any of those places. You'll find it, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And Mike, before I let you go, and I'm going to spring mm-hmm. this on you, this is, I didn't let you prep for this, but what is one thing that small firm architects can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Right off the top of my head, I'd say acknowledging it's not about you and helping others. In some ways, rather than looking at everyone as competition or wondering what you're going to get out of it, really trying to just be of service to you, to the profession, to your clients, to everyone that you, to the people that work for you, to young architects, just being of service and not always looking at it from the point of view, like, what am I going to get from this interaction or helping this person, but really just kind of trying to lift up the profession as a whole. I think when we do that, it really, and people acknowledge and can connect with that, it really has profound impacts. And I've kind of been able to see that firsthand from the work that I've been doing.
So. Yeah, you're a perfect example of that. Yeah. So Mike, thanks for taking the time to hang out with me today. I appreciate you sharing all of your knowledge. I love this conversation from the very beginning of talking about architects and what we should be called and how we should be presented and young architects versus the profession. I love that conversation. It was really exciting to have that. And so I really appreciate you coming here and sharing your knowledge with the Entree Architect podcast.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mark. And I also want to thank you, Mark. You know, you've been a really big inspiration to me. And I found you when I was studying for my exams. And I said, you know, this guy's on a mission to help architects create better businesses. And it's really beautiful. And so keep doing what you're doing. I think you're doing an amazing job as well.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate that sincerely. And that's why I do it. You know, I do it because, you know, it's making a difference. And I see you doing the same thing. So keep it rolling. And I appreciate it. I'll see you on the internet.
Yeah, have a good one.
If you liked what we shared here today, complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode162. Share that link. Share it up. Share that link with somebody who you think might benefit from the conversation that Mike and I had today. Spread the word. I appreciate it. And don't forget to visit the website at entrearchitect.com/freecourse to download your free course. Have unlimited access to Profit for Small Firm Architects at entrearchitect.com/freecourse. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening, and have an awesome week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.